Session number 12012.
Bill Pickering, reel 3.
As I said, they'd take you out in trucks and dump you 100 miles from nowhere, leave you with a bar of chocolate and 100 liras, which was about a shilling, and say, right, make your own way back. And we'd have to walk over the mountains and live off the land, pretty much the same as the SAS training now. I suppose the SAS trainers evolved from that. I know it was pretty arduous at the time, particularly if the weather was bad or high up in the hills. They also sent us on a one-month mountain warfare course north of Rome, where we had to learn how to handle mules, carry mortars on the back of mules, skiing, walking long distances over the mountains in snow. We did this for about 3 weeks to a month in the mountains north of Rome. And we were pretty fit. By the time I came on my next operation, came on this operation with Max Salvadori, I was pretty fit, although the evening's drinking that we had at times didn't help very much as far as fitness was concerned. We used to usually get absolutely pie-eyed with booze. I suppose the attitude was, you know, here today, gone tomorrow type of thing. But we trained pretty well until the time came to go on my final operation, which was on February the 4th, 1945.
Do you remember the briefing for the operation?
Fairly well, yes. I can remember being told that not exactly where we're going to go. Bear in mind, I was a sergeant, and sergeants weren't let into all the secrets of what they were going to do, particularly wireless operators. Wireless operators had just had to send messages and would tend to do as they were told and didn't take part in any planning of the overall strategy. But we were told that the reasons for going, the operation was in order to facilitate the easy transference of power from the Germans and the fascists to virtually the Allies, or as it was then, because the Italians, although there was a government had been formed by the Italians in the south, they weren't really in control of things. It was the Allies that controlled things, Allied military government controlled things. But we were sent there with the purpose of fomenting resistance, finding out what we could about what the Germans were doing, positions, selecting targets for bombing, generally making a nuisance of ourselves, and ultimately of preventing the economic disruption of northern Italy, which was the richest part of Italy, where all the wealth of the country was. It was understood that the Germans would carry out a scorched earth policy when they left, and we fully expected them to leave. Everybody was confident that it was only a matter of time before the Germans were defeated, and that when they pulled out, they would destroy everything. Now, our purpose was to make sure they didn't destroy everything. And we were dropped, I think it was February the 4th, on a moonlight night in a place called Monicilio. Monicilio. It was in between Turin and Savona, in the Val Bormida, Bormida, were dropped, as I said, 2 o'clock in the morning from a height of about, I think we're 2,000 feet above the ground, although how high the ground was there, I don't know. I know I dropped with Major Salvadori, Captain Kearney, Major Hope, Busty Millard, so-called, because he was a bit large, a bit of large girth, and an American OSS agent, who I know he's called Giovanni, but I don't remember much else about him. And we went by Dakota, jumping out of the door. One thing I do remember is that when we went over what they call the DZ, the dropping zone, there were three lots of fires. Fires had to be pre-arranged, the shape of the fires, in order to make sure that the agents dropped to the right people. And it was common practice for the Germans to light fires in the hope that they would get the agents to drop to them. So when we went over that night, there were three lots of fires. There was one by our own party's armband, one by the communists, and one by the Germans. And the American pilot had to distinguish which was which and drop us to the right one. Fortunately, he did find the right one. And we dropped into thick snow. In fact, so much so that our leader, Major Salvadori, was virtually buried in snow, and I had to dig him out with his parachute on. It was quite a job, and because there were partisans nearby shouting, "Hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, the Germans are coming." And it took quite a while to get him out, but get him out we did. And then by that time the partisans had gathered up all the containers, because they dropped containers of guns, Sten guns, machine guns, Bren guns. One container contained stuff for the British mission. That had cigarettes in it. Someone pinched a few of the cigarettes. And there was a bit of a row about that with Captain Keeney. And we stuffed all the stuff away in a church, in the cellar of a church, that the priest was sort of sitting on, helping the partisans. And then we split up. I went with Keeney to, I was taken to a farmhouse and hidden there for the night. And then the next morning at dawn, or just before dawn, we got out of the farmhouse and went up into the hills and hid in the hills in a little hut, because obviously the Germans knew that someone had dropped during the night. They'd hear the plane, they knew the fires were on. They came out looking for us. What they call a rastrellamento, that means a raking in. And they sent troops up and down all these valleys looking for agents that had been dropped and looking for partisans at the same time. But I remain with Keeney. I don't know where Salvadori had gone to. I don't know where Hope and Millard had gone to. But I know that I stayed with Keeney for several days. I can't remember exactly how long now. Such a long time ago. But I did manage to get in contact with the headquarters at Monopoly pretty quickly the first day. And Keeney used to make messages, and I used to encipher them, and I'd get messages from headquarters and decipher them for Captain Keeney to act upon.
What was the content of the messages?
Usually about what other people were doing, where Max was going to go, because Max had left us, Max Salvadori had left us and gone to Turin. And in fact, over the next couple of weeks, he managed to find his way to Milan. Now, our original intention was to go to Milan, Keeney and I. Those six people in the plane were really two parties. There was Hope and Millard were going to Asti. Salvadori, Keeney and myself were going to Milan. As I say, when we landed, we split up so that the Germans couldn't get us. If they got anybody, they wouldn't get the lot of us. And arrangements were made to meet one another a couple of weeks later, when Hope, Millard, Keeney and myself would go overland, travel through the night to a place called Cisterna d'Asti. Cisterna D apostrophe A-S-T-I. Where there was a very flourishing partisan band run by Colonel Otello. That was his nom de guerre, nom de battalion, they call it. He was called, known as Otello, and he had a very active and very good band of people about 8 kilometres north of Asti. And we went there. Keeney and I stayed a few nights because it was our intention to get to Milan. I think we stayed there 3 or 4 days, actually. Then we got dressed up as peasants, took a horse and cart loaded with vegetables, and started to walk towards Milan. We crossed the main road from Turin to Milan at a place called Villanova d'Asti. Strange thing happened there. As we're going through the town, a train passes underneath us, a bridge there, a train passes underneath us. Keeney and I were walking over it, and I said to him, "Ooh, if only we'd had some explosive. Never known this was coming, we could have blown this train up." I'd no sooner said the words, and boom, the damn thing went up. Someone else from the partisans had done it. So Keeney and I had to jump on the cart and thrash the horse and gallop as fast as we can out of the town to the other side. And we went up into the hills. We met another group of partisans belonging to the Partito d'Azione, the Action Party, under the command of a fellow called Renato. Then we, with him was a band of about, oh, must have been about 200 partisans. And we spent a day with them. And I remember particularly being with Keeney, who spoke fluent Italian. We were in the hills and with these partisans, and a large group of Republican fascist troops came up. So all the partisans got down and hid on one side of a hill. And these fascists came past, and we watched them all march past in platoons, probably about 5 or 6 platoons. There might have been up to 60, 80 men altogether go past us. And no one fired a shot. Everybody hid behind the hillside. Then they got out of earshot and eyesight and out of the way. And Keeney just strode up and down, playing hell with the partisans, saying, "Well, what are you doing this for? Why didn't you shoot all those fascists? Why didn't you just... You had them in your sights. Why didn't you kill them all?" And quite a row went on with the partisan leaders, who explained to Keeney, "You can't do this in the hills. There are German garrisons and fascist garrisons all around, all within very short distance, maybe 4 miles. And if you get yourself into a big scrap with a load of fascist troops, they can call upon reinforcements. We can't. We're stuck. They've only got to radio to get another battalion out, and they come behind you, and they've got the whole lot of you." So that it didn't seem to sink into Keeney, this. His only thought was killing this lot. Anyway, he let that pass. And the next morning, same crowd, about 200 of us on top of this hill, the partisans started talking amongst themselves, and they didn't seem too keen on the position they were in on that hill. So it was decided that about the bulk of them, about 180, should leave, and they actually left this hill, moved out of the way altogether. And it just left Keeney and I with about 18 partisans, including about four of the partisan leaders on top of this hill. Strangely enough, I felt very uneasy where we were, and particularly so when I noticed about, I should say it would probably be about a mile away, or near enough a mile away, I saw a patrol of German troops walk into a hut. We were on top of the hill looking down. I saw them walk into this hut, and I never saw them come out again. And to me, there seemed to be so many of them. I thought at the time there were about 60 or 70, and they all went into this hut and nobody came out. And this made me feel very uneasy. I thought, well, where have they gone to? And I think I mentioned it to Keane. I said, I'd like to know where they've gone to. And he said, oh, well, he said, oh, it'll be all right. He said, they'll be all in this hut. I said, there's too many of them gone in there. I said, I've not seen one come out. Anyway, as I say, I felt this unease, and I kept looking over towards where they were. And Keeney and I were on the edge of the hill at the top, on more or less on the ridge, and behind us were these other partisans, about two or three behind me, and another crowd over there. And for some reason or other, I decided to move away from Keeney. He was stood next to me, and I started to stroll away, and I hadn't taken more than two or three steps when all hell let loose. Machine guns, submachine guns, Schmeids, as the Germans were using. And Keeney immediately fell. He was shot. He'd got six bullets in him. I got down immediately, got my machine gun out, which was a Marlin, and started to fire. And there were one or two partisans. There was one little one, I don't know his name, came from Calabria. He got down with me. Another fella called Dino got down. And the three of us took it in turns, crawling along, firing at the Germans who had actually come up below the hill, out of our sight, and they must have all been given orders to fire. They'd just got up and fired at these on the hill, and they'd killed another four partisan leaders. And we three, in a little bunch, we'd take it in turns. Two of us would crawl away, and one of them would keep firing, and we gave covering fire until we got beyond the hill, down at the dip at the opposite end. And we started firing back from our positions, because the Germans, they were coming in larger numbers now from another hill over the side. They were coming over. We were firing, keeping them down. Then we'd move further and further back. If you could imagine a hill, we were on the crest of it here. The Germans had fired up here. We moved along.
Along the top of a ridge.
Along the top of the ridge, and then down in the dip. Then another hill came up this side. We got into this ridge here, fired again, and gradually got our way up the hill and out. And then it wasn't until we got the second hill was over here. It wasn't until we crawled up it and got round this side, the far side of the hill, that we were out of the fire of the Germans. Then we legged it as fast as we could. We moved back about, I would say, 800 yards, half a mile or so, still trying to get away from the Germans. We had to cross a valley. We thought we were safe crossing this valley, but just in case, we decided to run across it, and it was a good job we did, because the Germans must have guessed that we had to use this route, and they'd set up a machine gun to fire over this valley, and we actually ran across, and they didn't get any of us. We all managed to get across safely.
What was the name of the place where the Germans attacked?
It was near a place called Cinaglio. Cinaglio. It's, as I say, we got away, and then once we got out, we sort of moved away then, and we realised we were pretty safe, although we had to keep moving around. We sat down for a while, and the sweat poured out of me. At the time it was happening, you didn't think anything of it, but when you sat down and you thought, well, all that lot have been killed, and here we are. As I say, the sweat poured out of me.
Your CO was killed?
Yes, Keeney, he was killed. Then that night, I stayed in the same area, went back to the hill the next day.
Was it still February?
No, March. March the 5th. March the 5th it was.
That the attack took place?
Yes. And the next day we went and we saw to some of the peasants who said they would take the body away and have it buried. They took it into a church and some peasant lady took it away from them and it's been lost. We never found out where it was buried. Although I've been back since and had a memorial service and had a monument put in the wall of the local church. But they never found his body after that. Anyway, I had to go back then. It was no use me going on to Milan by myself to get in touch with Salvadori. So it was decided that I go back to Asti, to Cisterna, where I'd left Major Hope and Corporal Millard. It was a good job I did, in a way, because they'd have having difficulties with the radio communications. And they weren't getting through. And I was, mine. One thing about mine, I managed to save my radio set. And I got on a motorbike. One of the partisans had acquired a motorbike and he took me back to Cisterna. We took a chance going along roads because the Germans were all over the place. And in fact, we had at one stage more or less to drive through Germans. There were so many of them around. We just turned his twist grip and went as fast as he could. And we got back to Cisterna, where I reported that Keeney had been killed. They decided to keep me there. Major Hope kept me there. And this was about March the 8th. By then, they'd had a terrific battle. They'd had an enormous battle at the time. In fact, they'd lost. It was ridiculous figures. They lost about 8 partisans killed, and they'd killed something like, oh, I forgot the figure now. It was hundreds. They'd actually killed hundreds of fascists with the loss of 8 partisans. It was quite a tremendous battle. In fact, it became such that the Germans and the fascists virtually left us alone after that. And we stayed in Cisterna. I operated my set from there. We used to go out and have sorties, go to the local railway station, and if you saw any fascists on the platform waiting to catch a train or any Germans, you would go and hold them up and capture them and bring them into the partisan camp and use them as hostages, swap them for partisans. And get their arms off them, or we might go to a station and we went to a station called Bra and blew the station up and took the all the arms and ammunition from the partisans, took several prisoners from the fascists, brought them up to our headquarters at Cisterna, and then we used to make them clean all our rifles and made sure that they weren't loaded. We used to make them work for us. And eventually, strangely enough, although they were fairly badly treated at times, they were bashed about by the partisans. Nevertheless, after a week of that, they would volunteer to join the partisans because a lot of them were conscripts. Their heart wasn't in the job they were doing, and they were no match for the partisans. And then we stayed there about April the 17th. We did a big drop one night, Major Hope, myself, Millard. And we took the drop in, got all the arms, ammunition, etc. And about midnight, I set off back to my billet. It was a stable I was sleeping in that night. I slept in this stable, and I hadn't been there half an hour with Millard. A knock came on the door. Some partisans came, coming quickly. Major Hope's been killed. And I couldn't believe this. I wondered what they were on about. Anyway, I went back to where the meeting place we'd had when we'd had the drop. And sure enough, there's Major Hope dead on the floor. What had happened? Everybody had congratulated one another on the drop and all the arms and ammunition we managed to get. And while they were saying good night, one of the partisans had dropped his Sten gun, and it fired one round, and it entered him here and came out. You could see the little hole at the back.
Entered his abdomen.
It had entered his, I think it touched his liver. And that killed him. So, of course, we had to organise a burial for that. That was the sort of, apart from little skirmishes and incidents that we went on, as I say, attacking railway stations, blowing up railway lines, leaving tyre bursters on the roads for the Germans to burst the tyres on. We continued all those sort of operations. And then when it got towards the end of April, we got a message to say that the Allies were going to advance, and under no circumstances were the partisans to occupy the cities. They were to wait for the Allies. Well, of course, this fell on deaf ears. They weren't going to have any of that. They'd done all the fighting, because the Allies they'd done no fighting in the Po Valley at all. The line north of Bologna, including Geneva, well, they hadn't got Geneva then, the Allies. I don't think they'd reached La Spezia then. The Germans were in this Gothic line, they called the Gothic line. They started to pull out, and the partisans immediately decided to occupy the cities. They occupied Asti. I can remember getting trucks and going into Asti, and I felt like Churchill wandering down the street, because the crowds were lined either side of the main street just clapping and cheering. Whilst we entered the town, the partisans were grabbing all the girls that had fraternised with the fascists, and they cut their hair off and painted their heads red and did all sorts of silly things like that. As soon as we occupied Asti, we weren't there long. So they said, come on, we're going to occupy Turin. So we got into trouble.